going back to the colonial days when the first libraries were founded in places including, you know, New Jersey, Boston, Philadelphia, purpose of a library was to create a space for learning and community. Today, well, some have chosen to make it a battlefield where they come armed with politics, personal beliefs, even prejudice. This coming week is National Library Week, and with us now to discuss what your local and school and public library actually, what they are facing along with what you could do to stand with them in support is Associate Director with Every Library, Peter Brownberg. Thanks for being here today, Peter.
Thanks so much, Chris, for having me. Appreciate it.
Have a trio of websites for you to make use of. We do have them on our homepage as well, but I'll give them to you verbally in this time. Everylibrary.org, fightforthefirst.org. We'll get to that in a moment with Peter, too. And everylibraryinstitute.org. And as I mentioned, Peter, this coming week is National Library Week. Usually that involved going to libraries for reading and celebrating parties, but lately the times have changed in our local libraries, have they not?
Yeah, a little bit for the worse, as you might know. I mean, there has been a wave over the last 2 years or so of attempts to censor libraries, threaten their funding, threaten their jobs, librarians' jobs, if certain books by certain authors and topics weren't pulled from the shelves.
There are even libraries here in New Jersey. For example, a librarian of the Roxbury School District had to sue four township residents just over a year ago now on grounds of defamation because of various things that they were posting online about her for, again, this is just so weird to have to say this, Peter, for simply doing her job as a librarian, which is supposed to be presenting information, education, expanding young minds to see as much and gain an understanding of as much as possible.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I should mention, I'm a librarian and have been for over 30 years, and I've worked in public libraries, and I've worked with teens. And, you know, it's the most American of institutions and the most American of value systems to say, you know, here is information, here is the world of ideas and experiences and voices, and you have access to it so that you can choose to, you know, read what you want, to discover, to learn in a self-directed way. And of course, you know, part of education and reading is just key to having a healthy democracy. We have to have, you know, an educated and an informed electorate. So not to mention, of course, all the benefits for people's personal lives in terms of economic success and being able to contribute back to our economies and our communities. It's just really the foundation of all of that, and to see it under attack is concerning, to say the least.
Well, there are some politicians who are responding to this. Here in New Jersey, again, we have the Freedom to Read Act that's making its way through the State House in Trenton. It would require school boards to create an actual concrete policy governing what materials are in district libraries, regarding their removal as well. School boards would have to craft the policies based on a model policy that the state librarian, in collaboration with the state education commissioner and the New Jersey Association of School Librarians, would come to an agreement on. So you have the people in the trenches, so to speak, coming up with the policy as opposed to outsiders with agendas. So that certainly sounds like a step in the right direction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that Every Library does is we track all of the legislation that's happening around the country. And, you know, we're tracking right now about 120 bills that we would say are negative bills that, you know, seek to penalize libraries or defund them, or are sort of pro-censorship bills. But at the same time, we're tracking, as of this morning, 69 bills across the country that are positive, that are, you know, and I think probably about 50 or 60 of those are what we might call a right-to-read bill that is similar to New Jersey's bill in some way, that's guaranteeing, in a sense, the right of citizens, of taxpayers, of residents to have a robust and a non-censored collection of books on their library shelves when they walk in the library door, and that they can be assured that, you know, no particular voices or topics or perspectives are being discriminated against or removed or silenced, which, again, you know, is, you know, in America, we believe we can all think for ourselves and choose our own reading material. And as far as, you know, kids are involved, those are family discussions and choices where parents can set boundaries with their own children about what they can, well, you know, what they can read, where they can go, what TV shows they can watch, right? Whatever it is, that's parenting, right? It's setting boundaries for your kids. And as kids do, violating boundaries, then you talk to your kids about our family's value system and why those boundaries were set and what consequences might be for violating those. But in the meantime, like, you know, we need to have books on the shelf for, for kids, because the majority of parents in America want these books on the shelf. And there have been poll after poll after poll. I saw a new one this morning out of Idaho. Americans strongly oppose book banning. They do not believe that there are books on the shelf that are problematic, and they trust librarians over politicians to make these decisions about what should be on library shelves.
There was a poll similar to that just a couple of months ago from Rutgers Eagleton that was asking people in New Jersey, and the result they found was 58% of New Jerseyans say they're more concerned that schools may ban books and censor topics that are educationally important. Only 35% said they're more concerned that some schools might teach what they consider to be inappropriate topics. So there's more people in this poll in New Jersey that are more concerned about the banning efforts than they are of getting books banned. So that's, again, with some of this legislation Peter referred to, and the one I mentioned too here, the Freedom to Read Act in New Jersey, there's far more bills looking for censorship than there are responding to it. But a Freedom to Read Act, for example, could probably put out the fires a lot of those bills are trying to create. We're talking with Peter Bromberg from Every Library. He is their associate director of everylibrary.org, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And part of the programs of Every Library, and I reference the website fightforthefirst.org, is a program that, as I alluded to in the intro, allows people to organize and stand with their library and stand against the efforts to ban books. What are some of the mechanics? What are some of the direction that Fight for the First gives people?
Yeah, so fightforthefirst.org is our platform. It's kind of a suite of tools for community organizing and action. And when anyone can go there, and there's a button that clicks that says start a campaign. And really, literally, in 5 minutes, someone can start a campaign. But what would happen is if someone starts a campaign, I'm going to get a text message and an email simultaneously will pop up. And then I will get on a live call, a live video chat with people. Again, it's often people who are seeing some censorship or attacks happening in their school district or their public library. And at that point, I'll walk them through things. So tell me what's happening. What have you seen? And then we'll talk about, who are your natural allies? We'll talk about coalition building. But the thing that really makes this effective very quickly is that starting a petition that says, there's censorship going on in our library, or I support libraries, it's a short and sweet petition. Every library will put, anywhere from a few $100 to $1,000 behind some social media, digital marketing ads to put that petition in front of residents of that community, kind of, geo-fenced, whether it's a county, a school district, city, a town. And within 24 to 48 hours, this group that has started the campaign will have a list of hundreds or thousands of people that with a click of a button, they can say, thanks so much for your support. The board meeting is Thursday. Here's the policy we're trying to stop or the policy we're advocating for. Please show up. If you can't show up, here's the email address for the decision makers, or here's the link to zoom in and make a comment. And all of that. And beyond that, that's a first step, but we can help with media relations, with PR, with coaching on messaging, et cetera. And I'd say we're working with about 90 different campaigns across the country right now, probably in 36 states last night, actually. And it works. When board members or city council or county council members see, 20 or 50 or 100 or 200 people show up and say, we support the library, we support the principles of free expression and the right to read, very often they back off immediately, or sometimes it takes 3 or 6 or 12 months to make the change that you want to see. But that type of political organizing and action is very, very effective, and we can help anyone in any community do that very quickly.
I've noticed a trend too, Peter, as I'm sure you have too. When the time comes for these people who are trying to have these bans implemented, when it's their time to step up with their proof, with their support, with their evidence at the school board meetings, city, town council meetings, magically, they more often than not fail to show up.
Well, fail to show up or show up with, I would say a not robust body of evidence, right? They oftentimes will take one sentence out of context and say, like, this makes this obscene. So Then it gets a little ridiculous where they're saying books, you know, classic books like Slaughterhouse-Five or The Bluest Eye or, you know, books by Judy Blume, they're saying are, you know, they're calling these authors pornographers. And I think most Americans are like, I've read that book. That book's on the shelf in my house. You know, this is, you really can't tell the difference between that and, say, a Hustler magazine. That's a little kooky. And, you know, what we've seen from, there's lots of reporting on this, but it's very, very few Americans who are actually showing up and complaining about books. So they're getting some cut and paste spreadsheets and PDF documents off the web, and they're showing up. But I know, like, the Washington Post reported that they looked at over 1,000 book challenges in the country and found that it was like, I think, 10 or 11 people were responsible for the majority across the country of all of the challenges. They're responsible for more than 60%. So, but we see that in community after community. Couple people are loud. They showed up. They got the board's attention. But now that we're seeing that, I think average Americans who may not have known that this was going on in their local communities are becoming aware. When they become aware, they're moving into action, and we're fixing some of the damage that was done, and in other cases, preventing damage before it can happen.
For you listening, here's a great idea. Since this coming week is National Library Week, let's do everything we possibly can to make libraries the peaceful place of community and learning that they're designed to be. And with the help of Every Library, you can find out more at everylibrary.org and their Fight for the First campaign, fightforthefirst.org. They give you the tools by which you can confidently come back at those who are ignorantly trying to have books banned. Many of these people never get past the book title before they start voicing their objections. And maybe that's an idea, too. If you want to, for politicians or elected local leaders, if someone wants to have a book banned, make them do a book report as a requirement of their efforts to show they actually read the book, and have that book report graded by an educator of your choice. And maybe that will help weed out this little problem, too, that's getting in the way of librarians being able to do their actual duties, jobs, and responsibilities. There's a wonderful concept, don't you think? Find out more at everylibrary.org. Fightforthefirst.org, everylibraryinstitute.org. He is the associate director with Every Library. Peter Brownberg. Peter, thanks for the work you do, the awareness, the empowerment your organization gives us all. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris. Really appreciate it.